Welcome to No Filter. I'm your host, Anna Kasparian. Trump mocks the military. Free market capitalist mock, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. This is a show about people mocking other people and me defending the right people. And I'm looking forward to the show. I'm gonna tell you guys what I'm grateful for because Thanksgiving is this week. And I don't wanna waste any time. You know, these intros, they really cut into the content that we worked really hard to research and produce for you. So let's get to it. Let's go to our first segment. Let's talk about AOC. A Washington Times writer with an affinity for secretly snapping pictures of women's backsides to ridicule them on social media decided to criticize Congresswoman-elect Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez over a standard black blazer. Eddie Scari, yes, that's his name, tweeted and then later deleted, quote, "Hill staffer sent me this pic of Ocasio-Cortez they took just now. I'll tell you something, that jacket and coat don't look like a girl who struggles." Conservatives seem to have an obsession with AOC. And you know what? I can't blame them because she's pretty awesome. At 29, she made history as the youngest woman elected into Congress. And she beat an establishment Democratic incumbent who everyone thought would eventually make his way to House Speaker. But the best part about her is that she unapologetically demands progressive economic reforms. She's a force to be reckoned with, which is likely the reason why the right wing is terrified of her. When Ocasio-Cortez isn't being ridiculed over her choice of clothing, free market right wingers go on the attack over her economic principles and policies. For example, Anne Rathbone Bradley, who's an economic director at the Conservative Fund for American Studies, accuses Ocasio-Cortez of, quote, "rampant economic illiteracy" in an op-ed for The Hill. What makes these attacks so ironic is that these are typically the same people who supported the deregulation of Wall Street in the run-up to 2008. That led to one of the biggest economic nightmares in US history. Great job. So what spurred Bradley's piece against Ocasio-Cortez? Well, like most Americans, the incoming Congresswoman didn't have the funds to afford outrageously expensive housing in Washington, D.C. until her congressional salary kicks in. Bradley, proving how insanely out of touch she is, writes, "The predicament speaks to the young lawmaker's financial literacy, or lack thereof. The 29-year-old didn't think to consider something as basic as the relocation expenses of a new job opportunity." Okay, for someone with a PhD and very strong political opinions, you'd think Bradley would know what it's like to run for office in the US. The Federal Elections Commission has very strict guidelines regarding salaries for people running for Congress, which makes it really hard for working class Americans to run. Ocasio-Cortez brought that up during her interview with the New York Times, saying, quote, "I can't really take a salary. I have 3 months without a salary before I'm a member of Congress. So how do I get an apartment?" Those little things are very real. Now, contrary to Bradley's false narrative about Ocasio-Cortez's lack of financial planning, the New York Times also reported that she saved money before leaving her job at a restaurant and planned accordingly with her partner. You know, weird how Bradley didn't include that part in her AOC hit piece. She goes on to write, "If AOC doesn't know how much an apartment costs, how much confidence should taxpayers have in her ability to effectively deliver trillions of dollars in campaign promises?" Oh, don't worry. I'm pretty sure she knows how much apartments cost in DC, which is why she brought up her inability to afford housing in the first place. The problem is that median monthly rent in an area like DC is an estimated $2,146. And guess what? That's a lot of cash for someone who's not currently taking a salary. Whenever someone writes a nasty piece on anyone else, especially incoming political figures like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, I like to do a little research on the writer to see where their biases lie. So who exactly is Anne Rathbone Bradley? As I mentioned earlier, she is an economic director at the Fund for American Studies. On the organization's website, you'll find a plethora of free market touting press releases that say sweet things like this. Economist John Tamney makes the unexpected case that economic inequality is good. Bradley comes from a school of thought that seems to minimize the consequences of income and wealth inequality. Look, to her credit, she acknowledges that inequality exists, which is better than the goons who deny it. But Bradley believes that inequality is just the small price we pay for economic freedom.
Income inequality in and of itself might not be a bad thing. I want to live in a world, I don't know about you, where there's really smart people thinking about how to cure cancer. And when they do, I want them to be really, really wealthy, because it's a big problem. And it's going to take a really smart person or group of people to solve it. And we want to reward them with that, because we're all going to live longer, better lives from it, right?
You know what? I'm really glad that Bradley brought up cancer as a way to support her ideology, because based on her logic, only unfettered capitalism could lead to innovative cancer treatments. Except it was researchers in communist Cuba, not the US, who developed the world's first cancer vaccine.
In this building, Cuban researchers like Camilo Rodriguez have made their own vaccines for everything from hepatitis to meningitis.
Cuba system is producing more than 70% of the medication we need for our population.
There is one vaccine in particular here that has caught the attention of countries all over the world, including the United States. The vaccine is for lung cancer, and it's called Simivax.
To be clear, I'm not calling to reform our economic system to communism. Cuba's got issues, and we don't have the time to get into all of that right now. But for every argument these free market thinkers make in support of deregulation and lower taxes, there's always a simple rebuttal. Let's learn more about Bradley. She received her PhD in economics from George Mason University and was a Mercatus Center PhD fellow. Oh, funny how the Hill didn't mention that. The Mercatus Center is the same Koch-funded organization that funded a study to try to prove that Medicare for All would cost too much. But it was actually the same study that discovered that it would actually save US taxpayers $2 trillion over the next decade. Speaking of which, Bradley attacks AOC on that policy as well, writing, "Ocasio-Cortez has proposed free Medicare for All, it's not free, we would pay for it through our taxes, free college tuition, guaranteed federal employment at $15 an hour, and free houses for the nation's poor." It's the kind of extremist proposal you'd expect to hear from someone who has never made a budget, never been responsible for a business and payroll, and never had taxes deducted from a hard-earned paycheck. Actually, I'm pretty sure Ocasio-Cortez knows what hard work is, and she certainly knows what it's like to have to pay taxes or get taxes deducted from her paycheck. As someone who worked at a restaurant, chances are she actually paid more in taxes than the most profitable corporations in the US. But if Anne is parched from that high sodium diet and wants to direct her salt in the right direction, let's talk about who doesn't know what it's like to pay taxes. Let's play a fun game called Name the 18 Companies That Paid No Federal Income Tax from 2008 to 2015. Those companies include Pepco Holdings, PG&E Corp, Wisconsin Energy, NiSource, International Paper, First Energy, Priceline.com, Amos Energy, General Electric, American Electric Power, Ryder System, Duke Energy, Next Era Energy, Xcel Energy, Amirin, CMS Energy, Sempra Energy, and Eversource Energy. Oh, wow. Look at all those profitable energy companies dodging taxes while middle class and working class people like us diligently pay ours. And they do it legally too, with the help of corporate enablers like Bradley. I guess that's just the price we pay for this utopian free market, right? And please spare me the complete and utter BS about how we can't afford to use our own hard-earned taxpayer money on healthcare for our citizens. How is it that Israel can get it right and offer universal healthcare to its citizens, but we can't? And if a single payer system is so unbelievably expensive and radical, why is the US still giving Israel $3 billion a year in foreign aid when we can't offer universal healthcare to Americans? Strange. The Pentagon actually just underwent its first ever comprehensive audit, and guess what? They didn't pass. What a shocker.
Pentagon officials say that is beside the point. Quote, we failed the audit, but we never expected to pass it. We never thought we were going to pass an audit. Everyone was betting against us that we wouldn't even do the audit. The review found inventory discrepancies and that the Pentagon thought it owned certain buildings and installations that it no longer owns. It also found redundant military IT systems badly in need of better cybersecurity. The audit itself cost $413 million and was conducted by 1,200 auditors who visited 900 military sites. They examined $2.7 trillion in assets. The problems will cost an estimated $559 million to fix, according to the Pentagon.
We never have a real discussion about the waste that takes place in the Defense Department. Our politicians just keep pumping money into defense contractors while furiously shaking their heads anytime anyone brings up the topic of universal health care. Luckily, most of us aren't dumb enough to get distracted by shallow insults about Ocasio-Cortez's outfits or ability to afford housing. Maybe it's because most of us know what it's like to try to find affordable housing with stagnant wages. A whopping 70% of Americans support Medicare for All because we are literally the only developed country that doesn't provide healthcare to its citizens. So maybe Bradley is the financially illiterate one. Projection certainly is a specialty among those on the right. We'll be right back. Welcome back to No Filter. Trump really has a knack for consistently embarrassing himself and unfortunately the rest of the country, which makes one wonder how much time he takes to consider the consequences of his decisions. Luckily, Chris Wallace asked him during a one-on-one interview over the weekend.
When you're sitting at the desk, how do you make decisions? I mean, do you agonize over them? Do you second guess yourself?
I don't think about it.
Yeah. That sounds about right. He probably also wasn't thinking much throughout the duration of his Fox News Sunday interview either, because he said all sorts of crazy things. Like when he blasted the Navy admiral who oversaw the raid that took down Osama bin Laden. And this was all because Trump caught feelings over how the admiral criticized him last year.
Bill McRaven, retired admiral, Navy SEAL, 37 years, former head of U.S. Special Operations.
Hillary Clinton fan.
Special Operations.
Excuse me, Hillary Clinton fan.
Who led the operations, commanded the operations that took down Saddam Hussein and that killed Osama bin Laden, says that your sentiment is the greatest threat to democracy in his lifetime.
He's a Hillary Clinton backer and an Obama backer. And frankly,
he was a Navy SEAL.
Wouldn't it have been nice if we got Osama bin Laden a lot sooner than that?
Commander in Bone Spurs over here thinks he has room to blast a man who successfully took down a wanted terrorist. What has Trump ever done to show his bravery? Receiving 5 deferments to dodge the draft isn't so heroic.
June 1964, Trump registered for the draft after he graduated from the New York Military Academy. He received 4 education deferments while he was at Fordham and Wharton. Then, September 1968, Trump, starting his real estate career, got a medical deferment because of a bone spur in his foot.
I had deferments because of college, like a lot of people did. Deferments because of college, and I had a foot thing, and I get had deferment for that.
Despite the fact Trump had been active in various sports.
Loser. Admiral McRaven did respond to Trump's little boy statements, saying, quote, I did not back Hillary Clinton or anyone else. I am a fan of President Obama and President George W. Bush, both of whom I worked for. I admire all presidents, regardless of their political party, who uphold the dignity of the office and who use the office to bring the nation together in challenging times. I stand by my comment that the president's attack on the media is the greatest threat to our democracy in my lifetime. When you undermine the people's right to a free press and freedom of speech and expression, then you threaten the Constitution and all for which it stands. Look, at this point, I don't personally care who our thin-skinned president is bitter about. His insane comments don't shock or surprise me because he's already proven that he's a child who will target insults toward anyone who triggers his insecurities. I just want his supporters to finally shut up about how much they supposedly love our country and flag. I never want to hear them use soldiers as political props again, because we all know they don't really respect our troops. In fact, very few presidents have in recent decades, which should have been abundantly clear each time one of them greenlit unnecessary wars that put our soldiers in danger. Remember when Trump pretended to be outraged about the NFL players who would kneel in protest during the national anthem to raise awareness about police brutality?
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired!
Trump and his supporters exploited those protests to further divide the country and slander NFL players as traitors. Trump specifically argued the NFL was disrespecting our men and women in uniform who risk their lives to protect the US. Funny how easily people get distracted by nonsensical accusations while the very person they admire the most is mocking the military right in front of them.
Trump has been under fire for days after criticizing the family of a fallen soldier who challenged Trump at the Democratic National Convention.
You have sacrificed nothing.
Donald Trump has decided that he is going to keep with his personal tradition and break with decades of presidential traditions by not visiting US troops serving in active duty combat areas around the globe.
Donald Trump is going after the parents of a fallen American soldier.
And I said, somebody should run against John McCain, who has been, you know, in my opinion, not so hot. And I supported him. I supported him for president. I raised $1 million for him. It's a lot of money. I supported him. He lost. He let us down. But, you know, he lost. So I never liked him as much after that, because I don't like losers. But Frank, let me get to it. He hit me. He's not a war hero.
He's a war hero.
He's a war hero.
5.5 years.
He's a war hero because he was captured. I like people that weren't captured, okay? I hate to tell you.
When people come back from war and combat and they see things that maybe a lot of the folks in this room have seen many times over, and you're strong and you can handle it, but a lot of people can't handle it.
Donald Trump is getting a lot of criticism for scrapping a planned visit to Arlington National Cemetery in honor of veterans there. It's the second time, as you know, in 3 days he's canceled plans to honor U.S. soldiers after he skipped another scheduled stop at an American war memorial less than an hour outside of Paris while he was visiting the country Saturday, apparently due to rain.
We're already allowing the government to get away with murder when they send our troops to war to appease private military contractors looking to make a buck. Can we at least stand up against them when they use soldiers as political props? I feel like it's literally the least we can do. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This Thursday is Thanksgiving, a time when everyone's parents force them to say what they're thankful for. In keeping with that tradition, I am thankful for this show. I'm thankful for you, the audience, and I'm thankful for all the 5-star ratings you give us wherever you get your podcasts. Hashtag 5-star rating. I'm also thankful for our amazing crew, Jesus Godoy, Skip Vellacco, Edwin Umana. And by the way, this is the first time I dictated the script to my phone through Siri. And I'm particularly thankful that Siri wrote their names as Jesus Goodboy, Skip the Loco, and Add When Ammonia for Edwin Umana. There's also Ja'Cory Palmer, Bart Kyle, Mary Ignatova, and Brett Ehrlich. I'm also thankful for our new producer, Sophie Tsai, and her amazing Corgi Waffles, whom you should follow on Instagram at Corgo Waffles. Corgo Waffles is a good name. It's the second cutest dog in the world, by the way, after my dog Charlie, of course. And I'm also thankful for all the stuff I'm about to list in my favorite things. First up, for those baby boomers and Gen Xers who just don't know what to buy millennials for Christmas, might I suggest Monopoly for Millennials? The cover reads, "Forget real estate, you can't afford it anyway." It's not too clear how the game works, but the central premise is that instead of buying property, you buy experiences. The Amazon product page says, collect experience points by visiting the hottest destinations, from your friend's couch to the vegan bistro to a week-long meditation retreat, which actually sounds pretty awesome. And I assume instead of paying rent, there's some kind of FOMO price you pay to those who have already had the experience and posted about it on Instagram, because that's how it works in the real world. What I do know is that with a price tag of $51.79, forget real estate. I can't even afford this game. I never understood Monopoly, by the way. Does anyone really enjoy it? Everyone likes the fake money and the tokens, but it's not really that fun, right? Like, the object of the game is to bankrupt whoever you're playing with. You're pretty much forcing your grandmother to mortgage all her possessions so she can pay you 1 month's rent. Sorry, Nana. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for watching the show today. As always, I love doing No Filter. I love all the people that I work with, but I especially love having the opportunity to share the news stories that I feel the most passionately about. Make sure to leave your comments in the rating section, wherever you leave your podcast reviews, because I do read them and I do appreciate any constructive feedback or criticism you might have. Have an awesome Thanksgiving. We here at No Filter love you guys and can't wait to see you next week with another episode of the show.